general population. And we look for your testimony to help us with legislation that would help the veteran and his family. We know that we have many laws that passed, and we also like to know what the different agencies have done with those laws as far as veterans are concerned. That is our main object. We're here to learn, and we're here to try to help the veteran. And we ask you what your particular agency is doing and what not doing. We strongly believe that mental health should treat the veteran the same as ordinary health problems. There shouldn't be no separation between ordinary health problems and mental health. With that, I'm going to open the meeting. And we've been waiting for some of our political leaders, but they'll be coming in a little later for some reason or another. But I'd like to introduce, we have two assemblymen in the audience. I'd like to introduce Jerry Johnson, Mr. Johnson. Mr. Johnson, if you'd like to say a word, sir, you're welcome to say a word. Anything you'd like to say, you're welcome. Thank you for coming. And we have a new assemblyman, Jerry Kuhn. And Jerry, welcome, sir. If anything you like to say. Oh, David, I'm sorry. David. I'll have to learn that. Excuse me, David. Is there anything you'd like to say, David? You're welcome to say it. I don't see any other legislator at the moment, but they'll be coming in. I've spoken to quite a few of them. At this time, we have Mr. Robert Duffy. Mr. Robert Duffy here?
Yes,
right. Oh, great. Vietnam veterans, parent, would you like to make a statement? I'm going to ask that you want to read something, it's great. Read it for about 10 minutes. But then we'll give you all the time you want. As big as your statement is, I guarantee you that it will be read and it will be discussed at our committee meetings. But we're going to leave time to ask you questions. So we're going to give you 10 minutes and then we ask you some questions. You'll probably be there much longer than 10 minutes. Go ahead, sir. And by the way, welcome, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen of the Council of Veterans Organizations. My name's Bob Duffy. I joined the Army Airborne Unassigned in 1964. In 1965, I'd earned a commission in the infantry. And in 1960, we formed a separate unit called the 196th Light Infantry Brigade at Fort Devens, Massachusetts. We trained the soldiers as they came right off the street. So the sergeants, the officers, the men in the unit all trained together. We deployed to Tainan Province in 1966 and fought heavy combat throughout 1966 into 67. The largest battle being Operation Attleboro, where we captured 980 tons of enemy rice and stopped the 2nd Viet Cong Division and 9th NVA Division from a drive on Saigon. The unit then continued on with operations such as Cedar Falls and Junction City. During this time, our unit was not relieved in the field. The troop buildup was just taking place, and our unit was combat effective and just didn't get a break. We lived in the mud, we lived in the dust, we were exposed heavily to spraying. For want of a better term, I'm going to use the term Agent Orange, because although there were different chemical agents used, dioxin being what looks like the poisonous component, we were constantly exposed. We had to drink the water. We had to live in the mud, and so the exposure to that chemical was heavy. I was evacuated in January of 1967, spent 103 days in Valley Forge Army Hospital for pulmonary problems and a blood count that was just completely abnormal. They weren't sure what it was. It was either parasites or leukemia, so I voted for parasites and that's what it was. I was treated for parasites with the drugs of the day and served the rest of my time and was discharged from the Army in August 1967. I then attended college and graduated in 1970, got married, had my first son in 1971. My first son was born blind and with other learning disabilities. There is no genetic disposition to any birth defects on either side of my rather large family or my wife's family. And I made no connection then between my service at all or anything else. It was just the bad luck of the draw in life. I then had two more children, both who seemed normal until this winter. My second son had a testicle removed because they didn't attach right. This isn't uncommon and may be completely unrelated, but he'll be 18 today. And other than that, my two middle children seem in good health. In 1986, my youngest son, Timothy, contracted an extremely rare form of cancer called neuroblastoma and died from that disease in 1987. I then began to suspect that something was wrong. I guess it takes the infantry a little longer to pick up on it. And I began to read studies and lack thereof that had been done connected with exposure to herbicides. I attended a reunion in my unit of the 3,200 men that had trained together and served together, and I was standing in the parking lot in 1988 with three other guys, and three out of four of us have lost kids to cancer, and one of the others was neuroblastoma. Neuroblastoma has a rate of about 6 kids in a million, and to get a group of a few hundred out of 3,200 that served together and to find two men standing there whose children had died from neuroblastoma is just about a statistical impossibility. It's that point that I became convinced that there had to be some kind of connection. Many of the men in the unit had children who suffered everything from learning disabilities to cancers, and a lot of birth defects. It's not an uncommon story for me to meet Vietnam veterans whose children suffer from birth defects. The Agent Orange lawsuit that received so much publicity didn't really provide much, if any, money to veterans. It's a $180 million lawsuit, and we received nothing. Some veterans received a few thousand dollars at the most. It was ineffectual, and that lawsuit really didn't address or solve any problems connected with what we believe to be an exposure to chemicals used during our service. We wrote a grant. A portion of the money was set aside by Judge Jack Weinstein, the first federal district court, because really people didn't know how to use this money or how it would be most effective. So Judge Weinstein decided that we would set up grants around the United States. I chaired one of those grants, and of two municipalities in the United States to get a grant, Suffolk County was one of them. I was made chairman along with the retired Colonel Pat O'Toole from the Marine Corps, who's also an attorney, to watchdog that this would not wind up a patronage program for Suffolk County. The emphasis of our grant was to locate services that existed for disabilities. In Suffolk County alone, we uncovered over 1,400 agencies that already exist for services. We've computerized this information and put it on for public access at Middle Country Library on Long Island. Barbara Jordan is the director of that. So we've tried to take what is available and raise public awareness that these services are out there. That information isn't just for veterans, it's for anybody who has problems with disabilities, which ranges from anything to government agencies to the many, many private agencies that do exist. Veterans as a class have rendered a different kind of service than other people. It cuts across race, it cuts across gender, it cuts across social class. And that service was to do our duty for our country. My family has a long and distinguished record of service to their country. My great uncle wasn't fighting Father Duffy in World War I, but was Major Frank Duffy, a surgeon with the Fighting 69th. He was gassed and died a year and a half later after World War I from poison gas. My father served in World War II. My brother served in Vietnam. We didn't think service to our country was extraordinary or different. We felt it was our duty. I believe it was my duty to this day, and it's some of the proudest duty that I've ever served. The faith was broken to Vietnam veterans. We did our duty, and we came back to a country that not only didn't like our war, but blamed us for it. We didn't vote for the war or against the war. We did our duty. We did what a citizen's obligation is under the law, and I'm mighty proud of that and the men I served with. But the next generation is suffering in large numbers of very strange and very different circumstances, particularly with veterans. Veterans were healthier than the general population when we were called to service. So one would think that you would find statistically lower rates of birth defects and learning disabilities and things like that, when in fact it's common to have a group of men who really served on the ground and were exposed. It's a common story, not an uncommon story. My concerns are this. As we see the politics being played out both nationally and state level, we see talk of block grants shifting to the states. It's not that money won't be provided. The scramble for money, I'm sure, will always be there. What worries me is that within agencies that we'll see changes in classifications, for example, with group homes. Group homes have been a tremendous thing. The state does not provide services in large institutions too well. Willowbrook as an example. What the state does do very well is fund and regulate. And it's this funding and regulation that we've seen grow and mature during the time that my son has been alive. He's 24 now, and he's in good health. He's blind, and he is living in a group home near us. He works at a sheltered workshop, and he's very proud. He wants to work. He wants to be like you and me, but God didn't cut him that piece of the pie. If regulations get changed within bureaucracies at OMRDD or whatever agencies for the state, it can cut services that are going to kill people. And this is why I drove up to Albany to say this. By cutting the standards or making adjustments with the standards that exist on different levels and different grades and group homes, we can eliminate services that people will die. One young fellow in Brian's group home was choking at the sheltered workshop, and they thought he was having a epileptic seizure, but he was choking on food, and he's in probably a permanent coma today. The level of the caregiver is absolutely critical to the survival of people who cannot, although they want to, take care of themselves. That's basically my statement.
Thank you.
Bob, two questions having to do, first of all, thank you very much for being here. And I know it wasn't easy to talk about something that is so central personally to you and your family. And your coming here today is to help us address this particular issue of the families is a little bit different than most of the organizations are used to in the past, but is every bit as important, and in some ways our offspring are more important. Do you have any idea of the numbers of Vietnam veterans' families that may be affected statewide? We have been told, even though OMRDD was asked to present here today, they declined that invitation and apparently are going to file for the record, although we have not received that written statement yet. So we don't have the numbers of their estimate. Do you have an estimate through the contacts, through the AOCAP network, if you will?
I don't have those statistics. I do have for Suffolk County through who called our grant program, and we've been actively servicing for 4 years. It comes to well over 600 families.
In Suffolk County.
And this was delineated out as Vietnam veterans. We didn't check. There was no criteria check. Anybody could say they were and avail themselves of our services, which principally were to direct people to services that existed. However, we did fund summer camperships and even some tutorial training for some of the children. Of course, some of the children now are 30 years old, 25 years old. On the other hand, some of them are quite young. So that was the focus of our particular grant, which was relatively small, $114,000 of the money set aside by Judge Weinstein. That'll be winding down this spring. Colonel O'Toole and myself have formed a private corporation to try to keep serving families through a service office and direct them to services that do exist. We can't be a care provider. We're hoping that we can be a conduit to the services that do exist. One of the hardest things for people that have disabled children is finding what's available. And that's, you know, the hardest thing. School districts, you tend to get, as far as a veteran goes, you'll get little cooperation there because school districts don't want to break down their population by veteran, non-veteran, or classify that way. So they don't usually respond to our inquiries as veterans. But Suffolk County, we've served well over 600 families with this grant.
Let me ask you, are you enjoying any compensation from our government? Compensation.
Connected with Agent Orange?
Yes.
No, I'm not.
I read a study just this April that they have now, the VA is convinced that agent, well, this is the brand new one, it's only in April, the big study, which is quite a few pages. I couldn't even pronounce some of the illnesses.
Right.
Matter of fact, there is in front of me. That they're going to recognize what happened there. Now, that's the idea is, why can't you get compensation for it?
Okay. Our difficulty in that is a causal relationship. If you charge that hill and the bullet hits you in the knee and you lose your leg, that's a causal relationship. That bullet did that knee, and that's easy to show. It's in the records. The government has had the greatest reluctance, and as a matter of fact, I'll go further than that and to say that they've stonewalled this issue for decades. And I don't think there's any question about it. There were $50 million appropriated by the federal Congress to study Agent Orange. Center for Disease Control took that money and did not use it for Agent Orange studies, but extrapolated data out of other studies. It was chicanery and a waste of money. But the world being that what it is, that's what happened. They kept coming up with what seemed like a foregone conclusion that there was no problem here and no government responsibility. Responsibility wasn't the chemical companies that got sued any more than a bomb company that makes a bomb. It was the government who ordered this stuff to be made to their specifications and knew since 1948 that dioxin is one of the most deadly poisons we have. Now, as far as the Veterans Administration goes, they have been slowly, over the past, I'd say, 6 or 7 years, including another category and another category of illness that they would treat. I don't know as they compensate, okay? They are being willing to open the doors to treatment. I don't know of anybody who gets VA compensation for disability to Agent Orange. People go in and claim it. They are now treating them for, I think it's 10, and maybe they've added two more categories of illness. This isn't unprecedented. We had this with mustard gas after World War I, and we had it with atomic veterans in World War II. So I don't think waiting for the Army to die, so to speak, is anything new that we haven't seen from Washington in this century. And I think veterans of other wars who have suffered some of the disabilities of walking through Hiroshima and Nagasaki or being part of the testing in the 50s can attest to that, that cancers that only come from radiation, it seems that we should have a presumptive recognition that strange things happen under these conditions.
Well, Mr. Duffy, I want to thank you for your...
One last question. Bob, Mr. Duffy, not necessarily right now, but can you give back to the council either today or in follow-up recommendations about what we can recommend, number one, to the state government to better help the families care for these young people who've been affected by what we did in our war, in other words, passing the sins of the fathers on to the sons, if you will. Secondly is, what would you recommend that the council ask the federal government for, our congressional delegation, et cetera? Because on May 21st, we will be making recommendations to the legislature, to the executive branch, and to the our congressional delegation as a council based on this series of forums. If you have any quick take right now, great. If not, if you could follow up with us on a more expanded version, we certainly will include it in the record and consider it for the final recommendations and findings, sir.
I'd just like to say that New York State has been terrific in their services to us, in both individually and other people that suffer from severe disabilities. I think the generosity and professionalism in New York State is well known, and I can't thank New York State enough. They've saved my family more than once. And as far as recommendations to the federal government, the grasp is going to have to be crossing to the next generation and realizing that, and we're not sure what that means, that children have been damaged by their father's, mother's service to the country. And I don't know if we're ever going to get that. But that would be my recommendation, that the federal government make that cross to people who have been disabled chemically and genetically.
Pete wants to ask you a question.
Yes, sir.
In your studies, in your service to veterans on Long Island, will you be putting any kind of pieces together for Persian Gulf veterans in their flight with chemical warfare?
Yes, part of the cooperation that Colonel O'Toole and I are setting up is going to include the Gulf War veterans or any veterans.
On behalf of the council, let me thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Very good. I believe we have Assemblyman James Tedesco here.
He just left.
Let the record show that he appeared. Sitting on my to my right, I'd like to recognize the president, the state president of the Vietnam Veterans of America, John Rohn. John. Mr. Howland? Oh, there he is. Mr. Howland, Deputy Commissioner of the New York State Office of Alcoholism and Substance Abuse Services. Welcome, sir.
Thank you very much. Good morning, everybody.
Hey, how you doing? Thank you for accommodating me this morning. I'll try to be brief, and but I will be available to respond to questions and so forth.
10 minutes and questions.
Okay, good. Do it as quickly as I can. Thank you very much. My name is Jim O'Hanlon. I'm the Associate Commissioner for Program Operations of the New York State Office of Alcoholism and Substance Abuse Services. And on behalf of our Commissioner, Gene Somers Miller, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to share information on veterans' needs and the services which the New York State Office of Alcoholism and Substance Abuse Services provides to this group. OASIS supports, among other things, treatment services for alcoholics, substance abusers, and individuals with multi-alcohol substance abuse problems. Services range from short-term community-based outpatient treatment to long-term residential treatment. We will also have online a residential treatment program specifically designed to serve veterans, and I will give details on this momentarily. Let me first share with you some numbers with you on all veterans' admissions. Our total alcohol and drug abuse capacity at any given time, that is the current number of individuals in treatment today, is about 124,000 individuals. Of this capacity, almost 9%, 11,000 individuals, are veterans. Although we haven't checked on this, we think it's fairly likely that we provide many more services to veterans than does the Veterans Administration for Alcohol and Substance Abuse Services here in New York State. Half of the veterans' treatment admissions are in the 36 to 55-year-old age bracket. The New York City area accounts for 55% of all veteran treatment admissions to the substance abuse side of our program. Additionally, more African Americans and Hispanics are admitted to our system in this area, in the New York City area. Crack and cocaine is either the primary or secondary drug of choice for over 70% of our admissions. Again, the numbers provided apply to our generic treatment system. We are delighted to advise you that we will also have online a program specifically designed to serve veterans in the very near future. Samaritan Village Incorporated, a seasoned substance abuse service provider, will open in mid-June of this year, in about 2 months, an OASIS-funded 48-bed residential program at its newly refurbished 43rd Street facility in New York City. The target population for this program is exclusively alcohol and substance abusing homeless veterans. It has been Samaritan Village's observation, it is supported by the literature, that mental illness, in particular post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, and substance abuse, occur together more frequently than one would predict. Many studies of both mentally ill chemical abusers as well as homeless substance abusing veterans have found high rates of substance abuse among persons with mental health disorders. In addition, deinstitutionalization, the emphasis on community outpatient programs, and the promotion of shorter psychiatric hospitalizations have increased the opportunities for homeless veterans with PTSD to abuse alcohol and drugs, and have simultaneously caused both drug treatment and mental health communities to become acutely aware of the devastating effects of these additional disabilities on veterans' rehabilitation and successful community reintegration. In addressing this population, Samaritan Village will operate a separate combined or hybrid program outside of the existing mental health and chemical dependency treatment programs. It'll be a combined mental health and alcohol substance abuse program to respond to both sets of problems. They'll be concentrating on systems linkages to veterans organizations and additional support services, social service supports that can be provided to veterans, as well as linkages to other human service systems in the New York City area. Integrate one set of services within the other systems programs. It'll be a combined program. We are excited about this program's potential benefits. It's been a long time in coming. The construction of this project took us quite a while, but it's the result of some combined work of veterans groups, veterans advocates here in the state and our agency, and we've been working on it for a long time and really excited that it's finally coming online. Additionally, we have worked closely with a variety of other state agencies and veterans groups in recent years to encourage the development of training and targeted services to help address the needs of this critical population. Among our key accomplishments were the development of courses, special courses on addiction and coexisting psychiatric disorders, and PTSD and chemical dependency. The former contained specific information regarding veterans, identifying PTSD, examining suicide risk and issues related to spouses and children. The latter was developed and offered statewide to alcoholism and substance abuse provider staff during the time of the Gulf War in 1992. Both trainings have helped counselors and many of our programs to better identify and to diagnose individuals who may suffer from these disorders. OASIS has been very fortunate to have on our staff since 1989 the chief author and presenter of these programs, Mr. Vince Traynor, an Army Vietnam combat veteran. Mr. Traynor spent 5 years as a training liaison with the New York State Office of Mental Health, Mentally Ill Chemical Abuser Training and Networking Unit. As a training liaison, he conducted cross-training programs for mental health and chemical dependency workers around the state. Through joint efforts, a number of community-based MICA, or Mentally Ill Chemical Abusing Networks, were formed. These networks coordinate case finding, assessment, proper referral, treatment, and adjunct services to MICA clients.